Good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson. How you doing? I'm sitting here in my office, broadcasting from my, well, my office is divided into two sections. I have the radio section, and I have the desk section, where I keep all of my piles. I really don't have that many piles. Probably not as many as some of you do. I went to a house the other day. The guy wanted me to come by and look at his car. Check it out. See what I thought. I've never seen so much stuff in my life. You ever see the show Hoarders? There you go. That's what it was like. I do not understand how that can become an issue with people. If you ask my wife, she would say, I have too much stuff. But, you know, it's all relative, right? I was looking at my news feed this morning, and I saw an article about a local Greenville High School graduate and star football player. His name is Cade Ballard. If you follow East Tennessee sports, you probably heard of Cade. He was Mr. Football 2 years in a row at Greenville High School. Matter of fact, Cade is 30-0 as a starting quarterback going back to his high school days. And looks like he's going to be the starting quarterback for Army. Yeah, we have a starting quarterback. I don't know when the last time that happened for a major college football team. From quarterback in East Tennessee. Please send me a text message if you know somebody other than Cade that has made it to Division I college football as a quarterback. I know there was a guy named Steve Spurrier that did that. He was fairly successful from Johnson City. Let me know. If you know any others, I'd like to know myself. Hey, do you remember a car that was known as basically by a letter, and specifically the letter K, the K cars? They were a Chrysler product and really commonly considered the car that saved Chrysler. It was introduced in the fall of 1980 as a 1981 model. They were already under development when Lee Iacocca, remember him? He became the Chrysler chairman in 1978 after he was fired by the Ford Motor Company. Old models, poor quality, mismanagement, you name it. It brought Chrysler Corporation to its knees and to the brink of bankruptcy. I guess if it wasn't for Lee Iacocca, they may not have survived. Lee went to the government and said, hey, we need some loan guarantees. So it was really the loan guarantees, Lee Iacocca and the K car that saved the Chrysler Corporation, at least that time. The K cars were front-wheel drive, if you remember. They came in two-door, four-door, and wagon models, and they were called the Dodge Aries and the Plymouth Reliant. Do you remember that now? They offered pretty practical, comfortable transportation, relatively low price. Motor Trend magazine even named the Aries and the Reliant the 1981 cars of the year. You know, eventually, the K car line expanded to even more luxurious alternatives. The names of Dodge 400 and 600, the Chrysler LeBaron, remember that, honey? The Chrysler New Yorker, and the Plymouth Caravelle. Overall sales were about $3.5 million from 1981 to 1989. So that was a very significant vehicle. At the time, key competitors were from Chevrolet, the Chevy Citation, and the Chevy Celebrity. Remember that? Along with the other GM siblings built on that same chassis. And the Ford Granada and the Tempo coupes and sedans were what Ford used to fight those K cars. But this was really a decade when Toyota, Honda, and Nissan, and really some others, started to eat away at the market share of the big three. The K car was a bright spot for Chrysler. I remember seeing those cars all over the place. I mean, they were really good sellers. And they were really their first significant foray into the world of unibody front-wheel drive family cars. And that still dominates today. So we can thank the Chrysler Corporation for giving us a vehicle that Americans loved for a long period of time and did pretty well. They are not collector cars at this point. So if you own one and you've been waiting, let's say you bought it new, you put it in a garage and say, honey, this thing's going to be worth something someday. Well, you guessed wrong. So let's pause for a minute. I'll let you recover from that, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back. I don't know if you remember the front-wheel drive cars from that time period, but they weren't real good. One of the problems that they had was something called torque steer. Have you ever heard of that? That's where you got your wheels turned slightly one direction or other, and you give the vehicle a lot of gas, and it wants to jerk the steering wheel out of your hand. Well, that's called torque steer. It took the automakers a while to figure that one out. I remember when they came out with a hot rod Chevy Citation. It was a two-door. It was called the X11, and it had a 2.8-liter V6 engine with really good power. As long as you were going in a straight direction, it was okay. But if your wheels were turned when you gave it gas, yeah, you got a surprise there. And it took a couple of years for them to figure out the torque steer thing. I guess they learned how to handle that from Honda. Who knows? Of course, Hondas didn't have a lot of torque back then, and it wasn't a big issue. But, you know, American car companies are kind of addicted to power, and they wanted to put power in a place where it really didn't have any place. So they figured out now. You don't notice torque steer is a problem now. They've done some great engineering changes to absorb that. It's still an issue at times, but not like it was. So let's move on. You know, China is a manufacturing powerhouse. If you didn't know that by now, then you haven't been listening. And for many industries, but it is particularly central to the automotive supply chain. Now, they build about 25 million cars a year in China, and that's about a third of all cars built in the world. So when they have a COVID outbreak, it hurts all automakers regardless of where they are. And that's happening as we speak. China has a COVID zero policy that basically shuts down everything when there is an outbreak. And this couldn't be a worse time for this to happen with the ongoing chip shortages and the other constraints that we have right now in the car industry. Now, at our dealership in Greenville, we are currently selling just about everything that comes in as it arrives. That's why you see so little inventory at any car dealer right now, other than used cars that they acquire as trades or ones that they purchase at dealer-only auctions and from the rental car companies. I mean, I bought six cars last week, and I've got other people that work in a dealership that buy cars for me. But sometimes I'll get online and I know what we're looking for, so I'll buy cars here and there when I can find them. I did a search for Ford Mavericks. I was hoping that some dealer had maybe sold one and somebody decided to profit on it, you know, since they're basically selling for more than MSRP. And I found one in the whole nation, one Ford Maverick. So there's not a lot out there, but Hertz and Avis and Enterprise are always listing cars for sale that are coming out of their fleets. But most of the cars have high mileage. 3 years ago, when rental car companies recycled their vehicles that they had in their fleets, they would have anywhere from 15,000 to 25,000 miles on them. And now we're seeing 60, 70, 80,000 miles on rental cars. And rental car companies are going to auctions and buying used cars so that they have something to sell because they can't get vehicles manufactured for them either. So, you know, with so little inventory out there, if you want a car in the next year, you need to order it. You need to go ahead and do it. Then you stand a chance of getting what you want, but you have to get in line or you probably aren't going to get it. That's the way it is in a lot of industries right now. As you have probably noticed, lockdowns in China are currently keeping about 75 million people off the job right now. So it's a big deal for the auto industry as a whole. Okay, I talked yesterday about our new Hunter alignment system that we have installed in our service drive at the Ford dealership, Gateway Ford in Greenville. And the great thing about this, and I'll remind you, is that you can get your alignment checked for free now. At one point, if you wanted to get your alignment checked, you had to, or at many different tire stores and dealerships right now, today, if you want to get your alignment checked, they've got to charge you just about as much as they would for a full alignment. They have to put it on their alignment rack and hook up the fixtures onto each of the wheels and then run their program and run the scans that measure the specs. You don't have to do that here. You just drive through. It's basically kind of like a drive-through car wash, except we're shooting lasers at your wheels and tires and basically the taking measurements and giving us readouts instantly. So that's free here. And like I say, if you're just driving through Greenville and you want to stop by and get an alignment check, all you have to do is pull up to the service drive and somebody will come out and greet you and you say, I'm here to get my alignment checked. And they'll say, okay, they may have to clear a car out in front of you, but you'll just drive right into the shop and then stop. And then you can get out of your car and they'll share the information with you. That's all there is to it. Pretty easy, almost like going to Pals. Okay, let's move. When was the first time that you pumped your own gas in a car? I know that some of you young folks say, what is he talking about? I've always pumped my own gas. Yeah, well, back in the 60s, we didn't. In the 60s, you pull up to a gas station and some guy ran out and he might have a cute little uniform on and a hat and he would walk up to your car window. You'd roll it down and he'd say, how can I help you? And I'd like you to fill her up, Charlie. And so Charlie would open your gas door and take off the gas cap, put gas in your vehicle. And while that was happening, he would check the air pressure in your tires. He would either have you pop your hood or pop it from the outside, which most of them did back at that time. You didn't have any kind of inside hood release because people didn't steal things back then. But he would check your oil. And he could also pull off the caps off the top of the battery. Back then, we didn't have sealed batteries. They had little caps that you could pull up and make sure that there was electrolyte inside there. If there wasn't, he would add to it. He'd check your windshield washer solvent. Now, they would charge you for stuff that they would add, but so much of that was just complimentary. I guess it was built in the price of gas. Well, that doesn't really exist anymore unless you live in New Jersey or Oregon. Did you know that you can't pump your own gas if you live in New Jersey? Now, do you know why you can't pump your own gas if you live in New Jersey? Do you think that if you live in New Jersey, you just may not be able to handle such a complicated task as pumping your own gas? No, that's probably not it. Do they think you won't be able to drive off without jerking the hose off the pump? Yeah. Probably the real reason you can't pump your own gas in New Jersey started with a price war way back in 1949. Apparently, a gas station owner named Irving Rheingold opened up a new gas station. It had 24 pumps, and it was located in Hackensack, New Jersey. Now, he offered cheaper gas if you pumped it yourself. It was 18.9 cents a gallon if you pumped it yourself, and 21.9 cents a gallon if somebody pumped it for you. And so he was developing basically these long lines of people waiting to get that extra cheap gas and pump it themselves. I guess they thought it was somewhat of a novel idea. But apparently his competition didn't like the idea, so they persuaded the state to pass a resolution outlawing self-serve gas. You would think that enough time has passed for this law, which only exists in New Jersey and Oregon, to have been overturned, but it has survived repeated attempts to scrap it. The last word came from the state Supreme Court in 1951. Now, there was a change in 2015. Boy, that's a long span of time, isn't it? In certain rural areas of New Jersey, it has been allowed. Also on the Indian Reservation, it's allowed. To pump your own gas. But overall, it's still the law in New Jersey and Oregon. I wonder if they still wear cute little uniforms and wash your windshield and check your oil and tire pressure up there. Nah, I doubt it. Don't you? Okay, well, let's take our last break and we'll be back here in just a second. Okay, I have a question for you. What if in the state of Tennessee, the government in Nashville all of a sudden said by 2030, that's 8 years from now, that you can no longer buy a gasoline engine or diesel engine vehicle? What would you do? Would you move? Would you say, okay, well, that sounds reasonable because of, emissions and all that kind of stuff? Or would you just be in total shock like I am right now? Well, that's not happening in Tennessee, but it is happening in Washington State. By 2030, they have said that the purchase or registration of a new cars powered by gasoline or diesel engines is not allowed. So California and New York and Massachusetts set the deadline for 2035. Obviously, left-leaning states are going to be the ones who want to enact these rules. They are so giddy, you know, about electric vehicles and what it's going to do. The truth of the matter is, if you look at vehicle registrations, Washington registrations are about 5.6% of the total. California is 8%. You know, they're basically setting a goal that has also been set in Rhode Island and Hawaii by proposals. They haven't agreed to anything yet. The federal government in Canada has said it will outlaw new gasoline and diesel vehicle sales by 2035. The Biden administration has set the target of achieving, 50% EV market share in the U.S. by 2030. Rebates of $7,500 for Washington residents who buy a new electric vehicle or fuel cell vehicle, or $5,000 rebates for purchases of used EVs, could be included in the budget for the fiscal year beginning July 1. So they're going to incentivize people to do this. The question is, are there going to be the charging stations available? Because that's the other side of the coin. I mean, if you buy an electric car and you're traveling, you're going to have to really plan your trip. That's the way it is. Ask anybody that has a Tesla. They'll tell you that, well, you know, there's plenty of charging stations. They're all fired up about being carbon neutral, they think. Of course, it took a boatload of carbon just to build the car that they're driving. But it's, you know, Tesla has a big lead as far as charging stations are concerned. And plus, they charge faster. They use a higher amperage on their charging stations than a lot of the other car companies can handle. So, you know, the faster you can get a charge, the better. I mean, if they can get it down to where, you know, 5 to 10 minutes to charge your car so you can go an extra 200 miles or so, then that's reasonable. And also, as long as you ride up to a pump and you don't have a line of 10 cars sitting there waiting to get a charge, because that could be, my patience would not hold up very well with that. Would yours? But it's obvious that all the automakers are preparing for an electric vehicle future. You would not believe the amount of equipment that I've had to purchase already to service electric vehicle batteries. You know, I'm probably 2 or 3 years away from ever having to pull a battery out of an electric vehicle. But boy, I had to spend $5,000 on a lift to be able to do it, because those battery packs, like, they weigh 1,200 pounds. And other equipment, special chargers, special training that the techs have to have. So I realize it's coming, and I've driven the Mach-E, and I've probably put, I don't know, 2,500 miles on that thing, and I was impressed. It was a fine driving car, just feels like a car. It makes a whirring noise instead of an engine noise, but I do get anxious a little bit when I see the range dropping, and I know that I'm going to get home, but it's different. It's just a kind of a different feeling than I get versus seeing my gas gauge go down, because I know, you know, when my gas gauge gets down to almost E, you know, I know I pretty much have another 50 miles to go, and I'm not going to get stranded. I'm not going to let it get below E, but I've had enough experience with modern cars and gas gauges. They're pretty accurate. And I can live with that. But now when that battery level gets down there around 5%, how far is that going to take me? I really don't know. I don't have a feel for it. And I don't. It so much depends on how you drive the vehicle as well. And where's your charge going to come from? I know in Greenville there's only one Tesla charging station. There aren't many in the Tri-Cities. And that charging station only has like one or two chargers. It's in the basement of the General Morgan Inn on Main Street in Greenville. What a horrible location. But I think it was one of the first ones. So there, as far as I know, there aren't any other charging stations in Greenville other than at the car dealerships. We have several outside, but they are not DC chargers. They are the kind of charger that if you plug into it, it's going to take like 10 hours to get a full charge. Well, who wants to wait around that long? I mean, I know we're interesting and everything, but we're not that interesting. So if you're thinking about buying an electric car, do the research. You know, maybe you want to go down. There is a Tesla store in Knoxville right there at the Westtown Mall. You can actually go down there and test drive some vehicles. I don't know that you're going to be able to find any electric vehicles at any of the local dealerships that aren't already pre-sold. They might have a demo model. I understand Hyundai has developed a 800-volt system. Most of the other systems in, like the Ford Mach-E and several others, General Motors uses a 400-volt system. But the 800-volt system will charge a lot faster. And I think that's going to be an advantage for Hyundai, Kia, and those companies. But we shall see. I'm just here to, you know, keep you basically informed on this kind of stuff and hopefully not scare you too badly. If you have any questions, like I say, call me on my cell phone, 423-552-2020. I'll be able to help you out in one way or another when it comes to selling, buying, servicing, taking care of your vehicle. Even if you wreck it, I think I have some good advice to make sure that you get a good repair. That's what counts. Well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and we will see you tomorrow.